Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Fan Interference with Julie DeCaro.
She's smart, she's fun, she's different.
You've called her nasty names on Twitter. Now join Julie as she breaks down the world of sports.
It's never boring.
And now, here she is, Julie DeCaro.
She's really great.
Joining me is Alexander Goot, who has written for some really great publications. He's written for The Cauldron. He's written for Vice Sports, for Vocative. Comeback. He's going to join me today to talk some WWE because we had some interesting developments after Fastlane this weekend. And I know that there's a lot of you out there saying, I can't believe that you're going to talk about wrestling on your show, but we're talking about wrestling on the show. So if you're not into it, I understand, but there's a lot of cool people out there that are into it. So that's what we're going to discuss today. And so, hey, Alexander Goot is joining me from Santa Monica. How's it going?
Hello, Julie.
Hey,
how are you?
Thank you for that. How's the weather out there?
Very nice introduction. It is, as usual, pretty beautiful. Hard to complain in February when, the sun is out and not having to dig a car out of any snowstorms or anything. So, yeah, I can't complain.
Yeah, we're under a blizzard warning here in Chicago, so
oh my gosh,
that's not really the same. But so, hey, I was really excited to find out that you're a WWE fan because I feel like these days it's sort of something you keep in the closet until you find out that someone else is a fan and then you can talk about it. But I can't tell you how many people were like so appalled. They're like, oh my God, you're going to talk about wrestling? Seriously? But yeah, we're going to talk about wrestling.
It's funny. It's one of those things and always sort of hear this kicked around in other podcasts and other discussions. I mean, I think that's a perfect way to put it. It's one of those little sort of clubs that you have to find out. You find out that your friends are into. You sort of have your secret codes. You notice somebody maybe wearing a Dean Ambrose t-shirt or something. Then it's like, you're into this too. Okay, well, in that case, let me spend half an hour just marking out on what a huge fan I am. And now we're bonded for life.
Or like I was at Raw in Chicago and wound up sitting right next to a friend who I didn't even know was a wrestling fan, and the whole thing was hilarious. And it was like, you know, oh, I'm just here for my kid. No, you're not. You're here. We're all here for the same reason. So, you know, and the thing is that I always hear from people like, you know, it's fake, right? Well, I know that Tom Cruise doesn't actually fight aliens either, but, you know, Edge of Tomorrow was awesome. I mean, we suspend belief for many different reasons.
We also know how this OJ miniseries is going to end. But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We're still watching that one.
Right, exactly. So I wanted to start talking about Fastlane, which was Sunday night, and it's got to be, I mean, it was like an extended Raw. It was like, I think, the worst pay-per-view I've seen since they launched the network. What was your overall take on Fastlane?
Gosh, I can't believe I might actually be in the position, it sounds like, maybe of defending it a little compared to that response. No, it was interesting, and it's almost funny now talking about Fastlane. You have to almost go back and reset your brain because we also saw so much happen on the Monday Raw that followed it, obviously. But I agree with you. It felt like, to me, you know, in Fastlane, even before it was Fastlane, when it was I'm trying to remember all the previous incarnations of this. It was Elimination Chamber. It was before that, I think it was No Way Out for a period. But this pay-per-view that's, you know, wedged between the Royal Rumble, which is obviously everyone's favorite time to get together and bet and have pools, and everyone loves the Rumble, and then Mania in April. And so, I don't know, this pay-per-view has always sort of been like the unlucky one that's stuck in between those two big shows. And I thought this year it felt like, right, it was that other pay-per-view that was stuck in between two big shows. There were some enjoyable moments for sure, but overall, it felt kind of disjointed. It felt like, frankly, like the show you might expect from a company that I think was still kind of like figuring it out as they go, where they were going to go for Mania.
Yeah, you know, I thought it started out really great. They started out with Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, and that was great. I mean, opening it with women, I thought was amazing. That was a great match. And then Ziggler and Owens right after that was also a really good match. And so I was like, okay, we're kind of off to a good start here. And then it just sort of went downhill. The AJ Styles, Chris Jericho match was really off. It felt like they were missing a lot of spots. Mics were loud. You could hear people calling out their spots. The whole thing was just strange.
It felt very much there, like that was right. And I think much has been said about this, that it's, you know, everyone wishes, God, how much would you have loved to have seen AJ Styles and Chris Jericho in a WWE ring together? The problem is you probably would have more loved to have seen it 5 or 10 years ago.
Exactly.
It really did just feel like it was, as you say, Jericho having a hard time keeping up. The chemistry just wasn't. And you know, look, this is what we do as fans, right? It's AJ Styles has been in the company for about a month now, and we're already like, gosh, why isn't he working cleaner with Jericho? Well, you know, it might be because
true.
They've only been working together for a month, and we'll see if things improve. But that's, you know, that's the blessing and the curse of bringing someone like AJ Styles in. Obviously, fans are so excited. I'm so excited. Been wanting to see this for a long time. But the reality is it also sets the bar really, really high when you bring in someone like that. And yeah, that match fell a little short of that.
Yeah, that match was bad. And then why are we getting a Social Outcast versus R-Truth and Goldust match during a pay-per-view? I mean, first of all, Adam Rose is completely buried in Social Outcast. I hate that, especially after, was it 30? No, it wasn't a 30 for 30. What was the ESPN documentary they did about wrestling?
Oh, the NXT. Yes, I'm going to blank on the name, but essentially they did the little like hour, 2 hour long look inside.
Yeah.
Yep. The workings
of NXT.
Yeah,
and also
yeah.
Adam Rose has a disabled child, and he seems like the greatest guy in the world. And it seemed like that would have been a you know, everybody that watched that came out of that saying, God, I'm really pulling for Adam Rose. And it seemed like it would have been a great time to give him a huge push, and then just nothing.
Yep.
And now he's buried on Social Outcast. He doesn't even have a character anymore. I don't even know what that whole thing is just obnoxious. And why is Heath Slater like the leader of Social Outcast?
Well, that's the,
well,
you know, it's funny,
answer,
that entire, that entire group, right? And I could, that's sort of what the group represents to me, is it's, you know, and these are, they're hardly the first guys to be that sort of, well, creative has nothing for you, so we're going to kind of throw you in a stable that is unified by the fact that creative has nothing for you. And it's, the shame of it is, and I agree with you, that there are, but you know, you could say this going up and down the roster of so many people, there are people with some real talent in that group. Curtis Axel, whatever you think of him, and there's certainly been attempts to push him as well with Heyman, with, you know, his obviously
right.
lineage with Kurt Hennig. He is a guy that can really work in the ring and in the right situation for so much time. It's been thought that, okay, he could be a really useful hand. He's a guy that, maybe he doesn't have the charisma of The Rock on the mic, but, you know, can fill a useful role with how he can work. And, you know, instead he's here. I was one of the, when he was first brought up, I was so excited for the potential of Bo Dallas, just because I loved that character
hilarious.
In the beginning. I thought there was a real chance to sort of capitalize on that very, and, you know, I may offend some people by making this comparison, but whatever, that sort of Tim Tebow, weird sort of super, I'm going to be super nice and super confident and super successful, and I don't even care about all the hate that's out there. I'm just oblivious to him. If you go back and watch some of his work with that character in NXT, I mean, it's tremendous stuff, because it's something that really was unique at the time. This sort of, you know, you don't even know how to describe it other than just obnoxious, irritating, super sort of
right.
smarmy, but, you know,
it
refused
is totally
to
grown
give in
on
to
me.
The hate character.
When he went out there and he told Brock Lesnar that he just didn't believe enough in himself, and
oh,
everybody
God.
Was like, you know, rest in peace, Bo Dallas. That was one of the funniest things they've had on any show in a long time. And I'm just so bummed to see. And then we find out he can rap, like, better than Flo Rida. Flo Rida was, like, way better.
that was another instance of right WWE probably not actually being on top of the crowd reaction they were going to get when they
right.
shut that segment up.
So I hate seeing him down there, and I could say the same thing about League of Nations. I know Wade Barrett is probably going to be leaving the company, but I hate just seeing him buried down there in League of Nations.
It's been tricky, and it goes to, you know, and a lot of smarter people than I have sort of made this point, and I think it's a good one, is that, you know, WWE is always, and every fan is going to have their favorite wrestler and want their favorite that they love to be further up on the card, and that's, of course, fair and understandable, and the reality is that not everyone can be at the top of the card. You're going to need mid-card stables, you're going to need people to job and put the other stars over, and all of that is fine. The problem, I think, for so many fans, and I think the reason that the company takes so much heat, and it's a fair one, is that their storytelling and their writing and the way they set things up is such that if you're not at the top of the card, it really is just thrown together. And, you know, Social Outcast and League of Nations and a lot of these groups that you bring up, they feel that way. It's even right. If, you know, that's where you want to use these guys, there are just better ways to use them. Set up a storyline, give us some reason to care about them. And they really just haven't, you know, there's the potential for the Social Outcasts to have some fun with that notion of like, okay, these are guys that the company has discarded. They are determined to sort of take matters into their own hands, sort of the same way, you know, reminiscent in some ways of Long Island Ice Z and his internet championship back in the day, you know, go in that sort of populist direction. All right, like, we're going to get over in a way that the company doesn't want us to. Instead, they're basically just, you know, and Heath Slater's very used to this role, they're just comedic relief to come out and get their asses kicked whenever there's somebody that they need to put over, as you saw on Raw this week with AJ and Jericho. And it's, that's fine, but you just feel like with a little more planning and a little more insight, it could be even more.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I think that a complaint that a lot of us have had, no matter if it's at the top of the card or the bottom of the card, is that the storylines are so weak and they abandon storylines and pick up new ones with such frequency that I don't understand what the origin of a lot of these feuds is supposed to be. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, oh, all of a sudden, you know, Social Outcasts hate, you know, Goldust. I'm like, what? Okay. You know, and I felt that way with the Wyatts, and this is something that I've complained about for a long time. I think Bray Wyatt is just ridiculously talented. And they just have not been able to figure out what to do with him. And it felt like he was, you know, getting a push for a while, and then he's sort of abandoned, I guess, for the Roman Reigns push. And I think it's such a shame. And one of the issues I have is that it's always like, oh, the Wyatt family, now they hate you. And it's like, well, why? You know, like, I didn't understand the Undertaker thing. Last year, I'm like, why does Bray Wyatt hate The Undertaker? I totally missed the whole thing. Can you see them ever figuring out how to use Bray Wyatt better than their, you know?
I want to hope that the answer is yes. And I still, and that's, you know, people have talked about this, and maybe this is the attitude within the company, I'm not sure, that something about that gimmick and that character that he's working with, the supernatural elements, with the sort of, okay, this is the next generation of the Undertaker. He's got that obviously fantastic entrance and the
right.
Fireflies and all the little elements. And there's clearly a lot there, and there's a lot there that has gotten over. And maybe there is this general attitude of like, okay, you know what? Like, when we're ready, whenever it is, to finally push this guy, really push him to being one of the top heels in the company, one of the top people in the company, there's still time to do that. And that'll be fine because he has this entrance and these gimmicks and all these details, and it'll still go over great. And maybe it will. Maybe a year from now, they finally get fully behind him and push him to the moon, and we're going to look back on all of this and kind of forget it. Most people have forgotten Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez back in the day.
Right, so
you can sort of sweep a lot of that stuff under the rug, I think, fairly successfully if you want to. But I agree with you. It's he is a perfect instance of just, you know, this does take its toll when a guy comes out there week after week and tells you why you need to be afraid of him and tells you to follow the buzzards and tells you all this very intimidating sounding stuff, and then just can't ever seem to deliver when the match is on.
Right.
And to your point, even beyond just the matches, I mean, I agree with you. The Wyatt thing, to me, and this is going back to the Royal Rumble, and it's one of the most frustrating things. We can get into this a little bit too as we might talk about Fastlane, but I am just so, for me, it's so endlessly frustrating to watch the way in which the Wyatt-Brock Lesnar storyline was built around, was clearly a big part of what was a pretty great Royal Rumble. And then a month later, when it comes time for the next pay-per-view, well, you know what, creative plans have just changed, and we're just going in a different direction, so we're just going to forget that Lesnar-Wyatt stuff ever happened.
Right, and it's, right.
You that's not how this works. You undermine the characters, and you undermine Not to get in too much of a digression here, but I'll just say, you know, and this is to me a perfect sign of the way WWE works. I'm a fan of the storyline that they seem to be putting together for Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar. Now, part of that is it doesn't hurt that I'm a big fan of Dean Ambrose. And I love the notion of Ambrose as, you know, this crazy person who, okay, yeah, Brock Lesnar is this gigantic monster. Brock Lesnar is going to continue to tear him apart and put him through tables and put him through all this physical suffering. But you know what? Dean Ambrose, like, just doesn't care. He's a crash test dummy. He just wants to fight. He's going to drive that ambulance back to the ring. He's going to get in his face. He's going to issue the challenge for the no holds. But that's a cool story of, like, guy who has the odds against him, who knows that he's physically just overwhelmed, but who isn't going to give up anyway. He just doesn't care. It's not about winning the match. It's just about coming back and continuing to fight another day because that's what he does. That's awesome. The problem with it to me is that you've got a guy now in Brock Lesnar who, the beginning of Monday Night Raw, before Monday Night Raw even starts, they go with that video of him showing up before Raw to kick Dean Ambrose's, you know what, outside the arena. And I'm thinking,
we're rated
myself,
R. This is rated R, by the way, so you can swear.
Well, I won't feel right. I'll just this is Edge approved podcast. I'll throw that out. But I'm thinking to myself as I see this, okay, so Brock Lesnar is so mad about the fact that Dean Ambrose, who was in the match, who was a participant himself, Dean Ambrose, hits Brock with a steel chair, enables Roman Reigns to win the match. Brock is upset, and he's going to take his anger on Dean Ambrose by showing up a few hours early and, you know, F5-ing him onto a limousine. Well, wait a minute. A month earlier, the Wyatt family, after being eliminated from the Royal Rumble, all come back into the ring at Bray's direction, and the three of them, the four of them, beat him down, toss him out of the ring, and essentially cost him the Royal Rumble. Make no hesitation about doing it. That they just take the match from him. Brock has basically a storyline now. He's just okay. That, you know, moved on. Like I'm with it. I'm battling Ambrose now. I'm worrying, and it's that sort of just inconsistent storytelling. It's like, wait a minute. Brock's whole character is that he's going to tear through everyone. He's going to hold to account people that wrong him, that keep him from that WWE championship. That the whole thing is just that he's this wrecking ball that's going to eliminate everything in his past. And yet the Wyatts, oh, well, you know, we're just done with that. I'm not even worried about that. I'm not seeking revenge. It doesn't, at a certain point, you just start to feel like the company doesn't have that much respect for the audience with the way that they abandon storylines that way.
Right. And there are so many great storylines that, I mean, potentially great. So I remember last year when Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt were in their feud for whatever reason that was never quite explained. And they did, when they were in Chicago, they had video of them like driving this car around Chicago. And it was just a missed opportunity to do like a buddy adventure kind of, you know, like we hate each other, but you know, like here we are fighting in front of Wrigley Field. And then 5 seconds later, here we are eating, you know, Al's Italian beef and then back. You know, it was like, because you had two characters you could do that kind of thing with. And it could have been a great feud and it could have been a really funny feud. And they just, you know, that just died like after that episode. And the other thing that really bugged me was the Cesaro thing. Like I love Cesaro and they just can't get his character figured out. You know, for a couple matches, they did this thing where he did for Miz TV where he was like the professional, you know, and he came out in the suit and the sunglasses. And I thought that was such a great like turn for his character. And then all of a sudden we're back to the Swiss lifeguard T-shirt and Cesaro section and everything. But I mean, you're right.
The yodeling like, during this period.
But that idea is him as the, you know, the true wrestler, the, you know, the professional, the guy who comes out in this, you know, I thought that was great for him. And, you know, and then of course he got injured. And I think that part of the problem right now too, is that there's so many injured guys. And I think it's pretty obvious that there's Seth Rollins leaves a big hole when he's not out there, even when he's not on the mic.
No doubt.
He is just, you know, he's so talented. But I mean, you're right. There's been so many times during the course of the past couple of years when you're like, oh, this is going to be a great storyline. And then just the next match, you just hear nothing of it. And it's like, it never happened. And now we're on to something else. So,
well,
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and it speaks to your point with the injury to Seth. I mean, it's true. And that's the one thing that you don't want to get lost, and that I never, you know, it's funny. We all as fans, this is what you do as a wrestling fan. I think it's safe to say you talk to other wrestling fans and you complain and you fantasy book and, oh, I wish they did this differently. And I wish they would take this guy and make more of him. And it's fair to say that, look, like, there are reasons, whether it's all the injuries that have happened recently to Rollins, to Cesaro, to other people. It's also the fact that, yeah, it's really difficult to create 3 hours of compelling television every week when you don't actually know who might get hurt the next week and what adjustments you might have to make and where this is going to go. And so, you know, inherent with all of this is the idea that, look, I recognize that the people that are doing this job and putting together creative and figuring all this out have a very difficult job, and and there's no way to please everyone. And it's, you know, fair to talk about that. And yet at the same time, you do just feel like, and you wish, and, you know, maybe some circumstances would have to change to be able to do this. You just really could get there. Storytelling and the creative felt a little more like, okay, this is something that has been planned and built up a few months in advance, as opposed to getting the sense, as you often do, that a bunch of people are backstage an hour before the show just throwing things onto the page because they need to get everybody in.
Yeah, exactly. And so, having talked about all that and storylines that they abandoned too quickly and then storylines that just refused to die, let's talk about Roman Reigns. I do not hate Roman Reigns, and I will admit, partially is because if you're a woman, he is not bad to look at. But, you know, full idea that he's like Vince's favorite, and he's dressed like an action figure, which I've never been able to figure out. I feel so bad for the guy because it seems like, you know, the company's going to push him no matter what the fans want, no matter what anyone else wants. He is their guy. And I think anyone in that position would run with it. You know, if your boss says you're my guy and I'm taking you straight to the top, you're not going to argue with him, you know. But he just continues to get killed by the fans. And I thought the end of Raw, where he's like with Triple H, I was appalled. We're hearing now that the blood was fake. I'm not entirely sure because the reports that Roman Reigns was in surgery yesterday basically put his nose back together. But I thought that was such a disgusting beatdown for all the frustration the fans have had over this guy. And it just felt a little over the top to me. What did you think?
With the fans cheering it every step of the way. And that's what was so fascinating.
Doubt if he had a gun, the fans would have been chanting for Triple H to pull the trigger. I mean, it was,
you know, it's
awful.
It's funny. I think our shout out to one of the other like great wrestling podcasts out there, Cage Side Live. For anyone not familiar, the Cage Side Seats community over at SB Nation, pretty great wrestling blog that everyone should check out. But I believe they were saying similar things, that it was the notion of, you know, that crowd was going to be behind Triple H no matter what he did. They're just ready for someone, anyone to bury Roman Reigns, to put an end to this phenomenon. And I think, I mean, I agree with you, Julie, and I know a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on this. I sent out a tweet, I think it was while Monday Night Raw was going on or afterwards, but basically with the idea, and this is how it is to me at least, is that it's not about Roman Reigns. It's really not. It's not about the performer himself. It's about the fact that at this point, WWE is basically a really stubborn parent shoving spinach down a kid's throat, telling him, "Oh, eat your spinach. You're going to like this spinach. Have the spinach, damn it." And the fans are just sitting there and it's just like, no, we don't want this. This isn't what we enjoy. It's not even about Reigns himself at this point. It's just about not wanting to be told what we like. Nobody likes to be told who their favorite is. Nobody likes to be told what they should be enjoying. And that's sort of where we've arrived for all the skills that Roman has. And for the fact that he has at many various points in this whole journey demonstrated that he can be a very interesting character. But the fact is that nobody likes it being forced upon them. You want these things to happen organically. With Roman, they're just not.
Yeah. I feel really bad for him. I mean, he gets booed constantly. He's making plenty of money. He probably doesn't even feel bad for him. But, you know, he was giving an interview after Raw, and you could hear the crowd chanting Ambrose. You know, I mean, the whole thing was just.
Oh, yeah. It, well, it, he's it, been – and
I'm a Dean Ambrose fan, like that's my guy. But
yeah, I think it was Jim Ross in his blog that made this point, and it's a good one. And it's, look, it's all, you know, and that's the fascinating thing about wrestling, right, too, is that, you know, they can, and we've seen this with Daniel Bryan, we've seen this in so many instances, it's such a unique art form in that you can always adjust a storyline in the fly. You can always change the path that you're on. And so, you know, if the story that they actually wanted to be building to all this time is generating this massive hostility and anger and bitterness towards Roman Reigns on behalf of the fan base, so that one day they can turn him heel and it will be this big thing that blows the roof off the building of, oh my God, this is great, we get to boo the bejesus out of Roman Reigns. If that's the long goal in all of this, then they're doing a hell of a job, because they're getting it to that place. You know, the problem is, and I think most people think from everything we hear and everything that we read backstage, that that's not really the plan, that this is happening accidentally, that the plan that they want is for him to be the new John Cena and the face of the company and move all this merchandise. But they need to be able to adjust that plan. They need to be able to listen to the fans and listen to the crowd and listen to where things are going. And the irony of all of this is that it was just a few weeks ago that Monday Night Raw ended in the center of the ring with this incredible celebration of a guy who did exactly that. It was this incredible, the retirement of Daniel Bryan is this moment where the company is sort of, you know, they drop their storylines to some extent, obviously for a little bit, and have this genuine, heartfelt, really wonderfully done farewell to this guy who reached the top of the company, and credit to them. They handled that all beautifully. And that segment was beautiful. And yet then you sit and you realize, like, wait, haven't you guys absorbed at all the meaning of the Daniel Bryan story? Because that was ultimate case of, no, he wasn't in you guys' plans, but you adjusted the plan because the crowd told you that that needed to happen. And look at how wonderful it was. It gave us this incredible WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, and I think that the message the crowd has gotten from that is that they can change the storyline if they're loud enough, if they're consistent enough. But poor Roman Reigns is like the guy who's just getting his brains beat in by the crowd every single time he's out there. I think, you know, I feel bad for him. He's a freak of nature. He's gotten much better on the mic. He's worked really hard at it. I know they sent him to improv classes. He's getting better. It's just, you know, Vince has got this just, you know, weird fascination with him. And, you know, like I said, none of us are going to turn that down if that's you with your boss, you know. But it's hard to watch sometimes. And the end of Raw was really hard to watch, I thought.
Well, it's an understanding of what a person and a performer is and what he isn't. And Roman, I mean, this has been, you know, I'm hardly the first person to say this and talk about this, but Roman Reigns at various points in this whole, you know, arc of his has been really over. He was really over as the hot tag in the Shield that would come in and clean house in six-man tag matches and just, you know, be this glorious sort of monster who would finish things. He was really over for a brief period there. They were having some success putting him against obnoxious heel Sheamus, and it was, okay, you know what, we really want the belt off Sheamus. If Roman's the guy that's going to do that and he's going to give us these sort of cool hoss matches, get really physical with this guy and like get him, okay, cool. Like we can get behind that. That's an interesting storyline. But when you put him alongside Dean Ambrose, who actually is sort of getting that organic groundswell that Daniel Bryan got not that long ago, you put him alongside that. And you know what? Like the crowd does not want Roman there. They want their guy. They want Ambrose. The worst thing you could have possibly done at this moment is to literally hold the mirror, hold him up to Ambrose, tell the fans, okay, look at these two guys. We know you really want Dean, but you know what? Like, we're putting the belt on Roman because screw you. That's why.
Right. When Roman went out at the end of the Royal Rumble, I was like, it's going to be Dean. Oh, my God. It's actually going to be Dean. And then, of course, you know, it winds up being Triple H. But I really thought for that moment, I was like, oh, my God, they finally get it. And then no. So,
and that's where you get into, again, the long tease and the notion that, you know what, like at some point, all of this, It's the beauty of pro wrestling. It's like you play the game and the storyline out long enough. At some point, when and if they finally make that heel turn, when and if they finally put that belt on Dean, it's going to be this incredible moment. There's no doubt. And,
yeah,
you know, there's something to the notion that WWE could say, well, you know what? The longer we tease this out, the longer we make you crazy, it's just going to be that much more of a reward in the end. So we'll see.
I'm just not sure I give creative that much credit. You know, like, I like to think that there's that kind of long-term thinking going on, but I'm trying to
give them benefits out to
right.
some
extent.
Right,
and I had
you're right.
a 12-year-old screaming and crying at Michael Cole at the end of Fastlane because of Roman Reigns. He was just, he was so angry, he was crying, and I was like, oh God. So before
well,
we get on to WrestleMania,
into Cena then little by little at least.
Yeah,
if he's,
exactly.
If he's getting that sort of reaction from
right.
from the youth.
Right, right. So. I want to talk about WrestleMania because actually we've got a ton of stuff that happened on Raw. We've got to talk about the whole Shane McMahon thing. But before we do that, I want to talk about this piece you wrote for Vocative, which I completely agreed with, about WWE's sexism problem and how it's sort of seeming to get worse rather than better. And I know I got a lot of crap for complaining about The Rock coming out and doing this sort of whole 10-minute slut-shaming of Lana, which I thought was... I just don't know why there isn't anyone there who says this is a really terrible, bad idea to deal with. I mean, I've been to Raw a couple times, and every time I go, it is at least 50% women. There's tons of little girls there. And so when I see stuff like Ric Flair kissing Becky Lynch or, you know, the whole Rock, the way he's talking to Lana thing, it really bothers me. And I feel like I'm a huge fan of Stephanie McMahon. I think she's amazing. And, you know, online she's constantly doing this stuff about, you know, women and empowering women and no bullying and stuff like that. But then the product that goes out there sometimes, it just doesn't reflect that. And I don't know if it's, you know, Stephanie's no Shrinking Violet and everyone always says, you know, you just don't argue with Vince. Whatever Vince wants is what Vince gets. Is that really still what Vince wants? That's not good for business, you know? And then you've got Triple H running around with Floyd Mayweather all the time, you know? And I don't understand how all of that sort of fits in with the product they're trying to put out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I want to certainly give you credit, Julie, because it was your, you know, in many ways, your commentary on this and on The Rock and his speech that night and his, like you say, slut shaming of Lana that night that in some ways inspired me to want to write this piece. And I tip my cap to Tomas Rios at Vocative, who was open to the idea of me putting that together and writing that and getting that comment that was in there from WWE. And look, I mean, I agree with you. It is, you know, moments like that where you take this incredibly talented, super, you know, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that The Rock is one of the biggest stars in the world these days. And what's so frustrating about a moment like that is not just the sexism, which is obviously obnoxious. And in 2016, you know, frustrating that we have to watch that on television, that the best way you can go after a female character is that sort of slut shaming. What's wrong with you? You sleep around. Like it's just so obnoxious.
Right.
But what makes it, what adds a level to it, in my mind at least, is that it's a performer in The Rock who you know doesn't need to be doing that crap. The Rock could go out there, and we know this because we've literally seen it sometimes, The Rock can go out there and read the phone book and the crowd will be eating out of the palm of his hand. He's The Rock. He can do whatever he wants to get that response. And so the fact that either what he wants or more likely what the creative team sort of wants and the direction that this was set up is that sort of, you know, basically bullying and slut shaming of that character is just sort of infuriating. And, you know, look, it's one of those things, and I tried to sort of allude to this in the piece, and this is, again, just one person's opinion on what's happened here, is that to me, the WWE is a company that is sort of caught in transition in some ways. It is a company that is absolutely, and they deserve credit for this, a company that has come a long way from the Attitude Era, from a period where women really were just objects in the WWE ring.
Right.
We all remember that, you know, they were valets, they were managers,
and that's
eye candy.
that's why it was so frustrating to me to have people say, oh my God, have you ever watched pro wrestling before? And I'm like, well, have you watched it in like the last 10 years? Because that is not, I mean, this has all been sort of Disney-fied, including The Rock. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's very geared towards children. It's very, we've had a Divas Revolution. It's been very geared towards including women, making it, you know, okay for kids to watch. And at that moment to me was just so, and I don't know if Rock went way off script or exactly what happened, but that whole thing to me was just very sort of an anomaly for the last like several years of what's been going on. And, you know, the idea, and I can't remember what I was going to say. Go ahead back to what you were saying.
No, I totally agree. And it's those moments. And to me, like what I always sort of see them as, whether this is, you know, fair, unfair, true, not true, I always see them as sort of like, you know, as this company does make this progress and does sort of improve itself and go in this better direction, every once in a while, you're going to have these moments that pop up that are almost sort of these retrograde moments from another era that bubble to the surface once in a while. And to me, that was one of them. The Ric Flair, right, forced kiss of Becky Lynch, which was so sort of silly and unnecessary and took you out of the match. That was one of them. That felt very much like something that Ric Flair would have done 20 years ago. And you know what? The point of the article and the point of these things, and obviously you talked about this too, and it's not to just stir up outrage for outrage's sake. It's not to just be hysterical or anything along those lines. It's to say, look, this company has made a lot of really positive strides. You are doing a really good job with Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and some of these strong female characters, and what Sarah Del Rey and the NXT roster are doing for women's wrestling is amazing and incredible, and they deserve all the credit in the world for that. And yet I do still think it's important, as you did, and maybe in some small way this article, to just say, okay, you know what? You're still occasionally lapsing into some bad habits here. Let's just try to do a little bit better. Just try to realize that when you have these sort of slip-ups and when you go back to this past age and past era, it really undermines the kind of work you're trying to do with Stephanie, with the Be a Star program, with women's empowerment, with all these things. And so, you know, that's all it is just sort of, okay, let's try and do a little better. Let's realize that these moments are not helping the greater agenda that you sort of have here for really promoting women's wrestling.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I really appreciated the piece. I was really glad that you wrote it. I thought it was absolutely on. We've only got about 7 minutes left, and we still got to get to WrestleMania.
Oh,
so,
gosh, yes.
God, so much has happened. So Shane McMahon is back, which they really did a great job keeping that one under wraps. I was shocked. I think everybody was shocked. I thought Twitter just completely implode. I'm still trying to figure out what this means in terms of if they're going to go a new direction, if, you know, obviously this whole idea of Shane being in control of Raw means he's actually in control of creative, or, you know, exactly what's your takeaway from just a little bit that you saw of Shane?
You know, it's funny and right. I feel like, we could easily spend 3 hours just breaking this one thing down. But I mean, first I have to, just sort of echo and completely agree with what you're saying of what an incredible, I was literally like first saw on Twitter and then from a text from a buddy that Shane McMahon had made an appearance. I wasn't watching live at the time and immediately flipped it on because I wanted to see what was going on and see Shane. And I think that's an incredible thing is that in 2016, I sort of, as a fan, I really to some extent had given up on the notion of being well and truly surprised, surprised by something in the wrestling world. Everything, every latest Chris Jericho comeback, I remember having thought a month ago when AJ Styles made his debut at the Rumble. It was obviously such a cool moment and it was great. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And it was amazing seeing him in a WWE ring. But I remember thinking at the time, God, if you'd really been able to just avoid the rumors and have no idea that this was happening.
Yeah.
Because at the time, you know, it had basically been out there that he was coming. Expected it was going to happen at some point soon, and for them to really be able to pull that off on Monday, first and foremost, you just kind of have to tip your hat, because in this day and age, to keep that from leaking, to keep that off all these gossip sites is really impressive. And as far as the storyline itself, you know, it's to me it's the Shane McMahon thing is sort of the perfect push and pull of WWE, because in so many ways, like so many other storylines, like some of the ones we've been talking about, it feels very thrown together. It feels very illogical in some ways. Wait, Shane's here. Okay, that's awesome. Now he's arguing with his sister about this award that he received. He wants to take back control of the company. Wait, what? He's been gone for 5 years. He wants to. And then the part that to me really makes the least sense of all, and this was the part that I was just sort of scratching my head, is, okay, he wants control of the company. Okay, of course, this is going to turn into a WrestleMania match because that's the way wrestling works. Like, right, obviously, right. We're going to have a match for it. And for Vince to then, okay, well, the opponent that I'm throwing at you is The Undertaker. And I'm sitting there, yeah. And I'm just, well, wait, The Undertaker has been a face for some time, obviously, because he's beloved by the fans. He hasn't exactly been in any sort of like lackey to Vince McMahon role for years now. It just didn't fully make sense to me that that was the guy. I was thinking to myself, wait, if you were going back and put him in a match for control of the company and you sort of knew all this in advance that you were going to set this up, wouldn't the logical guy on so many levels be Triple H to have that match with? The son-in-law,
you know,
who has sort of served Shane to be the head of the company. And so,
where do I start,
you know,
the campaign to get you into creative? Hashtag
well,
Alex for creative.
Oh, God, but I don't think I could, believe me, I don't think I could handle that job, and I certainly don't think I could handle being backstage in that environment and some of those personalities. I think I tend to get overwhelmed.
Every time I hear Undertaker's coming back, I'm just kind of like heavy sigh, because he's a shell of his former self. He works so slowly now. It's like, stop, take a breather for a few seconds, hitch up your pants, you know, like exertion fart, and then like the next move. And like, it, to me, it's just painful to watch. And they keep trotting him out there over and over. And I just, I was kind of like, you know, my response to that was just, The Undertaker.
Well, it's funny because I on the one in one hand agree with you, and I mean, look, certainly Undertaker is, you know, it's very unlikely that he is going to be working the kind of incredible work rate in ring matches that he could do years ago, and he's obviously, and you know, look, he's not a young man anymore, and it makes sense, and obviously, you know, that's going to have an impact on the match. You're basically going to watch two essentially 50-year-old guys in one of
right.
the main events of WrestleMania. Neither one of whom is anything close to a full-time wrestler anymore. And so, right, there is this very weird sort of like, okay, what are we really going to get from this pairing? And the reality is, and people have, you know, a lot of people have talked about, the reality is that what you're probably going to get is one or two just crazy spots against Hell in a Cell that harken back to when Shane was a younger guy and he was jumping off Titantron
flyer,
through a
yeah.
table with the Big Show. And, you know, that's the going back to, like, that's the funny thing about it. Is the storyline somewhat illogical in a lot of ways? Absolutely. Is the match, is it a match between a couple of 50-year-olds that's probably going to be really sloppy at times? Yes, absolutely. But yet at the end of the day, too, and WWE knows this, and this is the beauty of their company, the spectacle is still going to be there. A couple
right.
of big, ridiculous spots will still be there. And that wow factor, I give them all the credit in the world. Monday night was a legitimate wow moment that I don't think fans saw coming. And that's why you keep coming back. You know, there's always all this talk of cancel WWE Network, and I'm so frustrated by the product and having your airing of grievances. And I'm as guilty of this as anybody else because I complain plenty. And then you realize something, at least for me, something like that on Monday was kind of like, oh, right, this is why you always come back, because you don't want to miss just those sort of ridiculous, fun, over-the-top moments like that.
Yeah, we've got less than a minute left. I can't believe we talked for 45 minutes about this. okay, so before we go, real quick, so we've got three huge matches now. We've got Shane versus The Undertaker, we've got Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar, and we've got Roman Reigns and Triple H. Which one of those, to your mind, is the main event?
Gosh, I mean, you know, I still expect that Triple H and Roman is going to go on last and to right take a mm-hmm. take a page from one of my old favorites, CM Punk, who's not there anymore. You know, the match that goes last is the main event, no matter what anybody says. And I think there's something to that. In terms of, you know, in terms of which match I'm just personally looking forward to the most, it actually is that Brock Dean Ambrose match, because, and again, this might, you know, there's no question that part of this is just because I'm such a big mark for Dean and I love him. But to me, that is in many ways sort of one of the most interesting and coherent stories that they're telling now. They arrived to it late, but I actually think there is a really interesting story of, you know, just guy who destroys everything in his path in Brock Lesnar versus guy who's overmatched, who's going to get tossed around like a rag doll, but who just doesn't care, who's just going to keep coming back for more. Like, I actually think there's something really fun there and that they can play with. And, you know, whether or not you actually believe that Dean has a chance to win the match, there's going to be something beautiful about just watching him keep coming back for more and more punishment. And, you know, that's the ultimate babyface quality, right? Is somebody who will, you know, and that's why they've been so successful with this for John Cena over all these years. Never give up. Just keep fighting. Just keep.
Right.
And with as much as the crowd is behind Dean right now, I think that could actually be a really fun, really cool story that they're telling. So I'm looking forward to that.
I absolutely agree with you. We actually went over time. We're now into the non-live recording time. But I just wanted to thank you, Alexander Goot, so much for joining. It was a great conversation. It was really fun. We'll have to do it again, maybe after WrestleMania. You can follow Alexander online at agoot18. You can follow me, Julie DeCaro, at Julie DeCaro. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll catch you next week on Fan Interference.